The built environment accounts for almost 40% of global carbon emissions. But that very size also means a huge opportunity. Building owners striving for net zero need to address energy efficiency and incorporate smart building technologies. This is not something that's far off in the future. These solutions are available today. Using buildings as part of an intelligent, networked energy storage system makes them more resilient, as well as improving the efficiency and reliability of the power grid as a whole. In this episode, we'll take a closer look at how your neighborhood can become part of the energy solution. In the past, we saw buildings and power grids as discrete, fundamentally separate systems. Now, things are different. With me to explain exactly what the difference is Henrik Arnström, Director of Product, Process and Innovation within Skanska's commercial development arm here in the Nordics. Welcome to the podcast, Henrik.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
That's a very impressive title. What does it mean? What do you do?
So I work with innovation and development, supporting our organization to make steps forward when it comes to increasing customer satisfaction, but a lot of focus goes to sustainability and reaching our net zero targets.
And you specialize a lot in the energy side of things as well, don't you?
Energy has become a big part of what we do, as we're going to discuss today. Buildings, as we do, are now being more active parts in the system. So more and more focus has grown towards energy, absolutely.
We're talking about energy storage here. Could you give us a basic description of where we are, what the landscape looks like? Because energy storage and the efficient use of energy is becoming more and more efficient for communities around the world and for companies. How are people taking on this challenge?
We're in a very explorative phase, I would say. We're trying new things. We're trying to learn on our own and together with our customers and together with the energy companies. So we're trying out a bunch of new solutions, new technologies to understand how can it support us in what we do? How can it improve our energy efficiency? And how can it improve the usage and the net zero ambitions we have in the energy systems in which we are located?
And when we're talking about energy here, we're talking about both electricity and also in forms like heat and even cooling.
Yeah, absolutely. It's when you say energy storage, everyone thinks of a battery storing electricity. But that's a big part of what we do. But I think we can do even a greater impact if we can store heat and cooling in a better way. So for me, energy storage is all of the above. It's thermal energy, but it's also electricity.
What are the practical and economic benefits of turning buildings into giant batteries?
Well, we have a few examples where we've been trying out then innovation projects and on our own and together with partners. I give two examples. Up in Trondheim, we have built what we call Powerhouse. That powerhouse has a lot of solar photovoltaics to produce electricity. When we do that, you are building a building that produces a bunch of energy, which you can then use. But at many times, you are producing more than you can actually consume. So what we did in that project was actually to build a charging station for the city bus. So when the city bus comes to the building, it can quickly charge and boost the energy levels in the battery in the bus. And then when the bus takes off and we still are producing more energy than we can consume and that we are consuming, we can then instead charge a battery on site in the building. And then when the bus once again shows up, then we can discharge the battery and charge the bus again. So by doing so, we can use the energy that is produced in the building and use it for something good. We can save it for later for a good purpose, charging the city bus so that people can travel around the city in a net zero energy solution, which is a great thing. That's a good example. Also, in the same product in Trondheim, by having this battery, we can then limit the need for these extreme peaks because at certain times, we need a lot of energy. So if we didn't have this battery, then we would have to ask for a lot of energy from the grid to support the building at certain times. But if we have an energy storage, we can discharge and use that energy together to kind of lower the burden, if you put it that way, to bring energy in from the street and from the infrastructure. So that's what we call peak shaving. So you take away all the big peaks where the demand is the highest, so you come down to a more flattened level. And that is something that is much better for everyone. The energy system and infrastructure doesn't have to be built out for these extreme peaks. In particular, when no one knows if several buildings will have the same peak at the same time. So if we have energy storage, we make sure that we can use the energy more wisely in the neighborhood. So what we saw in our research study up in Troy was that by having energy storage in our building could enable more buildings to be built in the neighborhood without having to dig down a bunch of more cables and infrastructure. So that's good in every aspect when it comes to sustainability.
Very practical advantages there. And I've actually been at that building in Trondheim in Norway. It looked fantastic as well. You had another example from Malmö where the actual structure of the building is storing this energy. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, so in Malmö, in a Prodotilia Terrace, we have a collaboration with E.ON, our energy provider, leading energy provider in the southern part of Sweden. So what we've done there is we turned in the entire building into a massive battery, not to store electricity, but to actually store thermal heat. What we learned is that buildings are perfectly suitable with their heavy materials to store just thermal heat over time. So in an ambition to reach net zero in the energy system, if we work together with E.ON, we can make sure that E.ON can actually, at the grid level or in the entire city, reducing the peaks and the demands for energy, if we can work together, not just Skanska and E.ON, but our building with neighboring buildings and the entire neighborhood. So with E.ON, we work with them. So as an example, it's a multi-use neighborhood. We have residential properties, we have commercial properties. So when the residential tenants come home, they all take showers, right? So they use heat. Then we make sure that at that certain time, we're not feeding heat into our building. We're letting the heat that exists in the system goes towards needed the most, to the ones taking showers. Because our building can actually wait to get heat because we have stored heat into a structure. When we've learned how this works, when people are taking showers and when we need heat in the different parts of the system, we can spread out the energy need over the hours of the days and the weeks in a better way, lowering the energy demand in the system, the power demands in the system, and by doing so, reducing the carbon. It's about being this interactive part and storing that thermal energy into the building.
That's also doing what you referred to before as peak shaving. It's cutting down the energy usage or the demand when it's at its highest and then spreading that around.
It's exactly the same thing. A lot of people know about peak shaving when it comes to electricity, but you can do exactly the same thing when it comes to thermal energy. And I would say that could make even a greater impact on sustainability and cutting carbon to do that on heat. Because oftentimes when we are to produce that last little bit of piece of heat, that's oftentimes you burn something to create that heat. So if you can spread out those peaks, we don't have to burn that last piece. Then we're saving carbon.
Very cool. And I love the way Hillier works and seeing that whole, as you say, mixed use neighborhood. It's great being able to find those synergies. So there are some really good advantages here and some benefits. But it's never that straightforward. What are the obstacles here?
One of them that's been very much discussed lately is the unclear business models. If you want to invest in energy storage, you want to make sure that that's going to give you a return over time. Right now, we know that it will give return maybe the next year or so, but what will it look like in the future? So there is some uncertainty of legislation. What can be done? What cannot be done? What's allowed? What's going to be allowed in the future? So I think most of us in this industry, we want more guidance what to invest in and where is the business model it's going to look like for the future. And the best way of doing that is collaborating with the energy companies, I'd say, like with E.ON, a great energy company that we've worked with many times or many years in Malmö. So together with them, try to find a path forward. But then another obstacle is, I guess, tied to the same thing, is the regulatory challenges. We can see today that we have technology. We can do a lot of different things, but sometimes we're not allowed to do it. And what we've seen when we looked across in Skanska, it differs. The technology is the same in all our markets, but the regulatory landscape is very different. So what's allowed in one country is not allowed in the other. What's okay in Sweden is not okay in Norway, but it's more than okay in Poland, as an example. So that makes it also very tricky to understand what to invest in and what you can and cannot do.
You point out there that we're having to look a few years ahead here. It's not a short-term game. This is a long-term game. What developments do you see within this area over, say, the coming 10 years?
I think we're just started to look into this topic. And what we see is all these different directives coming out from a body like the EU, as an example. And the ambitions is very clear. We want to transform the energy sector, but we do face the big challenge of an aging infrastructure as a barrier. Buildings have a great opportunity to be the solution here. The buildings, as we said, can reduce the peak demand and offer stability in this existing infrastructure. So we need to re-envision buildings not being a burden into the systems, but actually being active interconnected elements within the energy systems. If we do so, we can progress towards sustainability with more efficiency and being more effective in what we do.
It's no more the idea of having a power station over there, cables bringing it into the building just consuming the energy and that's it.
Most likely not the future. We need more batteries, and buildings as batteries is definitely part of that solution.
Great stuff. Henrik, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Henrik talked about the collaboration between Skanska and E.ON, working together to try to achieve net zero in an energy system. Now let's hear more about the cutting-edge technology that E.ON, one of the largest energy companies in Europe, is deploying when it comes to storing and distributing energy. Niklas Jonsson is Commercial Product Manager for Ektogrid, an amazing energy solution from E.ON. Niklas, welcome to Shaping Sustainable Places.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's get straight into it then. Ektogrid, from what I understand, it does several things all at once in buildings. It's energy distribution for both heating and cooling. It's energy storage, and it's also providing this inbuilt flexibility. So what would you say is the key advantage of Ektogrid here?
So in short, we can provide the same heating and cooling to the end consumer, but we will use 75% less energy by doing so. So I would say that's the main benefit.
A 75% reduction, that's an astounding figure.
It is, yeah. We are focusing on both the excess heat and excess cooling that is being generated. So when you cool down a building, let's say a supermarket or office, you are automatically generating a byproduct, and that is waste heat. So what we do, we recover that waste heat and we bring it a second life. So we bring it to another building, let's say a residential building that needs heating, and they could use that energy to heat up the building. And when you heat up a building, you will get the excess cooling that you could bring back to an office or supermarket to cool down the building. So that's the core of what we do, more or less.
Okay. So when you're cooling down a building, you're getting excess heat or thermal energy. When you heat up a building, you transfer that thermal energy into the building, which means that your medium, usually water, gets cooler. So let's call that excess cooling. And you can transfer that heating and cooling between different buildings. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. So, but in Europe today, we have two separate infrastructure, more or less, for heating and cooling. And what is really shockingly in Europe is that we waste the same amount that we consume to heat up the same continent. So that's the big amount of waste energy out there that it's up for grab to use, but we waste it. So it's what we usually say, it's one of Europe's biggest untapped energy source. Yeah, that we are now tapping into.
Wow. So that's effectively we're using twice as much energy as we need to.
Yeah, kind of. So it's there is almost 3,000 terawatt hours of waste heat up for grab in Europe every year.
Wow.
So it's a major asset.
Okay, so now we've seen the problem that we've got. How about the solution? How can you explain how ECTAGRID works? Okay, we're transferring the heat and the cooling in between, but how do you do that?
Instead of taking separated approach towards heating and cooling, we take an integrated approach. So we circulate energy within a city quarter, and so that's the high level differentiation from the existing infrastructures in Europe. So we integrate it and we circulate it. And to be able to do that, we are using a thermal grid, thereof the name ECTAGRID. Mm-hmm. So we have a grid that is capable of sharing energy between buildings. It's a low temperature grid, and the benefit of that is that we could tap into low temperature sources, such as this kind of excess heat and excess cooling I just mentioned. It's most often low temperature waste heat and waste cooling. Also the benefit of using low temperature grid and pipe is that compared to traditional centralized energy production with high temperature, you get losses in the way out to the end consumer. Instead, here we use low temperatures, and with that we decrease the losses in the grid, and we can also adapt to all these energy sources that is available in the area instead of producing more centralized.
So you've got this warmer pipe and this cooler pipe running, or grid running around the neighborhood. How do you make sure it goes to the right place?
For that purpose, we have a digital platform called E.ON ECTAGRID. It's in-house developed from E.ON. This platform makes sure that we control the flow and the temperature all over the grid. So thousands of parts of the grids is being monitored and steered through this platform. And it's also a platform that is not only monitoring and steering, it can also predict. So we have right now over 1,000 AI models active on this platform that learn both from the supply and the demand how to optimize the entire system to generate as low carbon and high efficient energy solution as possible to the end consumer. So this is something that we see is really important, and that we of course is really proud of that we have developed, because going from centralized energy production with one control room, now you have thousands of assets in a city quarter. It's very crucial to get this kind of digital layers into this kind of new solutions.
You're talking about it working in like a neighborhood scale, a city quarter or something. What are the scales of the deployments that you've already got out there? And how big can this go?
Yeah, so actually we have from the scale of two buildings only up to the biggest project we announced this year in London, where we will connect 6,500 apartments. So that's for sure the biggest project until now. So that's the scale until now. But going further, I would say the scaling possibilities are more or less unlimited, because since we have a decentralized approach together with this digital layer, it means that we could very feasible grow a grid. Compared when you have a centralized approach, you need to take a bet on how this city quarter will look like in 10, 20, 50 years. And you need to design the infrastructure based on that. But here you could do a feasible scaling of the grid as the city and the new city area grows. So that's a very important part. So you don't need to take that big upfront investments in the beginning. Instead, you could phase it out. So that is very important. And also, from a strategic perspective, you could also phase it outside the quarter to neighboring quarter. That is also the benefit of having this decentralized approach. So when you established in, let's say, in this quarter, now city quarter in London we mentioned before, we could quite easily then expand into other areas and share energy between the city quarters as well. So this feasibility is very important to scale.
And the other thing that you mentioned, and just to make it even clearer for the listeners, is that you only feed energy into this when it's needed, because it's almost self-sustaining. And then if you just need to top it up a little bit here or a little bit there,
when we have shared all this energy between the buildings, when we have harnessed all the local sources, when we have stored and utilized the stored energy as well, then we bring in new energy. We usually say that we could reduce the supplied energy into a city area with 75%. So for you as a customer, property owner, you will get the same heating and cooling, but we only need 75% less energy to provide the same heating and cooling. So it's very impactful and very efficient.
Let's think about what the consequences of this could be. I mean, if we can reduce the need for energy by up to 75%.
Of course, like I said in the beginning, the problem is massive in Europe and all over the world, since 80% is of the heating and cooling is from non-renewable sources. So the impact is if we instead use all available energy that is in the city quarter, we are capable to moving away from gas and other fossil fuels. So that, I would say, is the first part. And of course, that will reduce the greenhouse gases. So from a planet perspective, that is, of course, very impactful. And also other benefits of moving away from combustion of fossil fuels is that we can also improve the air quality in cities. In general, in bigger cities all over Europe, this is getting bigger problem. And also we see, unfortunately, of course, when the temperature is now is getting higher on the planet, the demand for cooling is rising. So we see it's really important now to provide the city with heating and cooling to do this in a circular way. So don't waste this all excess energy that is being generated, but instead circulated. So cooling will be very relevant for many cities onwards.
Niklas, thank you for your insights and thank you for being part of the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Henrik Arnström from Skanska underlined that we're facing the challenge of working with aging infrastructure, but that buildings themselves present a great opportunity to be part of the solution here. By using buildings as energy storage, we can address peak demand and improve stability across the grid. The key is to re-envision buildings, not as separate energy consumers, but as active, interconnected elements within the energy system. And there is Ectogrid, a smart system from E.ON that can coordinate heating and cooling between buildings across a city district. Using artificial intelligence, the system is designed to reduce the need for supplied energy into a city area by up to 75%. Scaled up, this could have a real impact on the climate, because a majority of the heating and cooling in buildings still comes from non-renewable sources. That's all for this energizing episode. If you enjoy our discussions, please subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. I'm John Ambrose. Please join us again next time as we explore shaping sustainable places.